Welcome back to Daily DVR, and today our presenting sponsor is, of course, Cufflinks.com, baby. I'm wearing my Hand of the King pin and everything right there. But this month at Cufflinks.com, we want you to be using code FOOTBALL30 to get 30% off all NCAA and NFL merchandise. Check it out, baby. You can also use the code DVR20 at any point to get 20% off your purchase, no minimum. Go over to Cufflinks and do what I do. Just check stuff out. I know Justin is always over at Cufflinks.com. Just yesterday, he called me and he said, "Hey, Axel, I was looking at Cufflinks.com. It's so awesome, isn't it?" Didn't you say that to me?
Yeah, I called him at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I was just looking at stuff online and thought you should know. No, I'm on there right now looking at this Hand of the King lapel pin. Yeah. Only $18. It's not
bad. That's what I'm saying, dude. Look, you get 20% off. No minimum. That's this. You can have this in your... What's 20% of 1890? Do you know what that is, Justin? Like I'm so bad at math.
It's like a buck something.
Hey, that is meaningful, people. You know, I'm always a guy... That's the thing about Cufflinks, too, is I come on and I say a lot of the promo codes. I have mine, DVR20 or Football30 this whole month for NCAA and NFL. But they always have the codes and they put them on the site. It's kind of like a fun game. You go there, you find out different codes every day, see what kind of products they have. Check it out. Cufflinks.com/DVR. Let them know that you heard about them from us. It's a fantastic family-owned company. Cufflinks.com. Thanks for their support. Now let's get on with the show. Today is Friday, January 11th, 2019, and this is Daily Top Shelf Fandom. Yeah, baby, let's do it. Then the little music plays, but we're on YouTube, so I'm just going to go right into it. All right, Justin and I are here. We're here to talk some Game of Thrones prequel stuff. I have a few quick notes about my New York Jets hiring a coach. We might have some other bits and bobs to talk about, but I am super excited that Justin and I are back together again. It's about a month-long hiatus, but before we get started, just to remind you, you can find us at dvrpodcast.com. You can email us, dvrpodcast@gmail.com, and check us out at Twitter, @DVRPodcast. We're doing this 5 days a week. Two are only available on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/DVR for as little as $3 a month. You get two extra shows. This week on my shows, I've been talking football. I've been talking some parent corner. I get a little bit more personal. It's fun to do. It's a smaller audience. A lot of people that I'm in contact with almost every single day. Great peoples. And another great person is a guy I'm looking at right now. What a beautiful tie he has on. His name is Justin. What's up, buddy?
Not much. I'm Justin Thomas. I'm from Top Shelf Fandom. You can follow me on MapQuest, latitude 34 degrees 79, and longitude 100. That's Asia. That was a joke I've been working on.
That was very successful to me.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I've been planning that. That's why I took a month off to do that joke.
I remember those days. The maps would never, every time you printed it, like the map would cut halfway. Like you'd have to put them together and then get a piece of scotch tape.
Well, I mean, why follow me on Twitter when you can just find me? You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Just come and find, especially this is good for my enemies.
Get your people, you
know, and I have way more enemies than fans. So, you know, or supporters. So yeah, this is great for them just to be able to find me, knock on my door, you know, get me, come and get me.
Come and get you, baby.
Yeah. I'm excited to be back too. And we got some good news for television.
Yeah, we do, man. We got some GOT stuff to talk. Now I did want to start off talking a little bit about, I've been talking some NFL this week. Now, I know you're not a big NFL fan. Are you a fan of the NFL, Justin? How much do you watch it?
I don't gamble much anymore, so I used to watch it when I gambled.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a boxing UFC baseball guy.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I only followed baseball for 1 year, and that was the year, I think it was 85, when the Mets won the World Series. And then I never followed baseball again. I just wasn't into it. And I also kind of feel like my team won the World Series. And that was the only year I was a Mets fan. And so that's unlikely because the Mets are not a great team, right?
No, that's why I'm not a football fan, because I grew up in Detroit. So the Detroit Lions.
Oh, but you had Barry Sanders, man. That was.
Yeah,
you,
but I'm not. I heard about Barry Sanders. Oh, okay. And I saw you were younger. Commentating. Yeah. I had Harrington, who was playing the piano at halftime far better than he ever threw a football.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. See,
Handsome man, though.
I was lucky, man. I got to see Barry Sanders play, and I was sitting. Actually, I changed seats halfway through the game, I remember, so I could see a different perspective. And that is the greatest single athletic performance I've ever seen with my eyes. And I also saw Jerry Rice tear up the Jets for like 215 yards. But Barry Sanders, I think he ran for 175 yards. I've never seen anything like it, because he was like...
He had to do it. Nobody was scoring.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, he was just running for his life. I mean, they had no line, but also he was so compact and low to the ground, and it made everybody else look like a giant. And they were so much bigger than him, but he was so fast. And then when they hit him, it was like it just didn't matter. He was like a little indestructible ping pong ball going around. It was amazing. Anyway, long story short, my New York Jets hired a new head coach yesterday. And I just wanted to address it because I've been talking some football. I won't take too long, but I'm very disappointed. My team, instead of hiring Mike McCarthy, the Packers' ex-head coach, who would have been a decent, serviceable, he's won a Super Bowl, he knows how to run an organization, not a terrible guy, they just kind of got stale in Green Bay, that would have been okay. Or they could have hired a guy like Matt Rhule, a young guy, college, first job, like a guy with a lot of spitfire. But instead, they hire Adam Gase, the former head coach of the Miami Dolphins, a man who made his entire career off of calling play like three or four plays into Peyton Manning's headset, and then Peyton Manning would pick the play and run with it. And it was basically running the offense. So it's a sad day for me as a New York Jets fan, and I just want to give a shout-out to other sad football fans as we enter into a fun weekend. And I can only hope that my sadness will be buoyed. And I'm sorry, John, but I have to admit this. Shout out to John, because he's a Patriots fan. But that the Patriots lose. If the Patriots lose, yes. So I'm in an unfortunate position, which I don't like to be in life, Justin, which is hoping for another's suffering in order to appease my own. That's not a good place to be in life, you know? I want to try to be more positive, but I got to be honest. That's probably the only thing that's going to make me feel good, is if the Patriots lose.
I really admire that. I think that that's something to really strive for in life. I always just, I can't be happy unless somebody else is failing. So I'm with you, brother.
I'll be honest with you. When it comes to sport, I pretty much abandon all of my morals and ethics, mm-hmm. and just kind of do my thing, man. That's why I have.
Well, that's gotta be a big bag you leave behind. Oh, I left all my morals and ethics at the door. Where I'm like, it's in that freaking sandwich bag.
It's
right
pretty
there.
Big, you know. Yeah. I'm a nice guy during the day, I do kind of abandon it, and I have an unabashed hatred for the Patriots, even though I know they're fantastic. So that's all the football I wanted to talk. I just wanted to kind of address that. I'm going to put my best face forward, though. And as a New York Jet fan, since I'm so used to losing and being disappointed, I am just going to hope this, that this is the greatest I've been disappointed of them hiring a head coach ever. I was happier when they hired Richie Kotite, who for people know is like the worst head coach ever.
What about Rex happy. Ryan?
I was very happy.
I'm not a football fan, and he's a maniac, so
I was super happy when they hired Rex Ryan, because he has spirit, man. I didn't know if he was going to win, if they were going to tank or whatever, but they were going to do it with pride and just try, you know, and have fun doing it. And they did, actually. He got us to two AFC championships with freaking Mark Sanchez.
He seemed like
he's totally unstable, dude.
I like that.
And he has a foot fetish, too. You know that?
Yeah, I like that. I'll just say before we close off football, just for like, just to try to get more popular.
Yeah,
the Patriots are really popular. So you just said a lot of bad stuff about them.
Yeah,
me, I'm a Patriot guy.
Oh, you are okay. Okay.
All the way. Brady played for Michigan. I'm from Michigan, so okay. Patriots all the way. We'll go get a beer at the bar. You know what
there
I mean?
You go put the car in the yard. All
this
right.
This guy's acting all bluey over here. So no, I'm all for the Patriots. Whatever my demographic is.
Oh man, no, I can't. You know, do looking it, dude. To here. I cannot do it. I cannot do the Patriots. But all
I'm
right,
willing to go there. My Patreon's in the link.
Yeah, go to Patreon. Patreon Patriots. Patreon.com/ I hate the Patriots. Or no, Justin loves them. But
yeah, I love whatever
I'm sad about it, and I'm disappointed. And I do put a lot into the team, and I love the team. And I'm actually hoping to have some Jets. I've reached out to some people to do some Jets podcasts to have them on Daily DVR so we can talk a little sports, but give them a chance to talk entertainment. Because I always find whenever I listen to some football podcasts, they always sneak in a little Game of Thrones or Star Trek or Star Wars or something. So they like to kind of visit the other side of the fence like I'm doing right now. But I'm going to have a good attitude, and I'm going to, like I said, I'm going to hope that In spectacular Jets fashion, they will fail up, and by hiring the worst possible coach, he will then win the Super Bowl with the New York Jets. He will lead them to a Super Bowl, because that's the only way this story can be written. They can't hire the good guy, it works out fine, and they do it. They have to back their way into a quarterback by accident, picking Sam Darnold. Originally, they wanted to get like Josh Allen or something. Now they're going to back their way into a coach, and they'll accidentally win the Super Bowl, and then they'll never win again, and I'll be happy and I won't care.
Well, that's why Steve Carell in the office is the best boss in the world, because he's so incompetent that the people actually just want to work other than be bothered by
him. There you
go. True character only reveals itself when a character is backed against the corner. So it's up to your Jets now. And if you're looking for Jets fans, you should go to those meetings they have in church basements. I'm pretty sure it'd be a lot down there.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, trust me, dude. That's. I think that guy was Bill. Isn't that the guy who did it? Bill Smith. I think that he was a Jets fan. All right. So enough sports. Let's get into some TV. What do you want to do? You want to jump right into the Game of Thrones stuff, Justin? Or did you want to talk shortly about the Vikings, them releasing this kind of little press release, or talking about this spinoff? Or what? It's up to you, buddy. Whatever you want to do.
Yeah, I'll touch on it.
Okay. Because I know you were a Vikings guy. Yeah.
I'm huge into Vikings. I have had my doubts this past season. They 2 episodes ago had an episode that really got my hopes up and was reminiscent of their past, the past seasons 1 through 3 specifically. And they've kind of lost their way a little bit. But what you kind of freaked me out before this, because we hooked up, we connected online. Is how we hooked up,
online.
And connected. Grindr. And you told me that it was canceled, and I was like, holy. First off, embarrassing, because I'm like, I'm a huge fan of the show.
Well, no, remember, I kept on saying, we were talking, I was like, well, you're probably going to want to talk about Vikings. Mm-hmm. And you were like, yeah, I mean, I guess. And then I said it like the 4th time, and I was like, well, you heard the news, because I saw on our Facebook, on our Daily DVR Facebook page, Jenny had posted that Vikings, you know, this is going to be the last season. And then I read that, and I said it too. But after I repented, I was thinking, I think you had told me that already.
Yeah, there's only 1 season left, so there's no actual news. It's just, I think what's happening right now, and again, I got the announcement right when it came out, I believe like 3 weeks ago, that they're going to end season 6, after season 6. We're in 5B right now. Vikings does 2 sections of episodes. They do season 5A and season 5B. So the literally like 2 more seasons we're getting. And that had already been announced. That makes sense to me, actually, with the character arcs. But I think what's happening now, and I'm not too sure, I need to look, because there is an influx in the actual news, like you said, of people saying it's canceled. But what they mean is after season 6, they're going to be going for their spinoff. I'm not aware of what that is yet or what they're working on. My common sense and just my gut feeling is this is just, you know, marketing at its best. And they are trying to just churn up some attention for what the spinoff is. And they're probably testing the waters a little bit. So there's really no big news. You scared the crap out of me, because I thought they were going to end it literally like if they were to end it after the next 5 episodes. I think we're in the 5th episode. That would be pretty detrimental, because you would have literally an unfinished show.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wasn't sure of. That's why I wanted to bring it up and clarify too. And I mean, this is a thing that these, I mean, all publicity does this, right? Yeah. Like you know, it's just like how a company will get publicity by denying something when normally they just keep their mouth shut. You know what I mean? Like, no, we're not involved.
We are the marketing. You
know? Yes.
So they exactly. want to yep. throw out a few tweets from the actors saying, oh, we're done after season six. Information yeah. we already knew. But for casual fans, more casual fans, people that don't have podcasts, you know, people with lives, I guess, whatever.
Right.
People they're probably outside. Like, oh, my God, you know, it's being canceled. Oh, but there's going to be it's not all going to be gone because yeah. there's something else in the works. So it's just we are the machine now. We grind it out. That's why yep. I get so mad when I get copyright strikes on my channel. I'm like, I'm advertising your product. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, well, that's how I've always felt, man. I've never quite understood that. I mean, I understand large scale, like when you're, you know, selling something on a street that's a copy. Okay, I understand that. But I've never understood why it took so long for the music industry and the film industry. TV has been a little bit better at it. And these sports is the worst. Like the NFL won't let you record something and like they won't it's against Twitter policy to show plays, you know, unless it's sanctioned or something
dead on spot,
you know, so people yeah. make GIFs of them or GIFs or whatever you call it, so you can't see that so it can't be seen. I don't know what the heck they get around it, but it's so stupid. Of course, anytime anybody comments on anything you do or talks about it negatively or positively, you're making people more interested in it. You know?
Yeah, so it's all about is it transformative yeah. enough? And, you know, this kind of nicely segues message, into yeah. what's happening with Game of Thrones, with whether you want to call it a spinoff or a prequel. The working title, I believe, it's nothing official, is The Long Night, which we can talk about in a moment. But it's very interesting to me because you know how this works. There's only a pilot ordered for this.
Right.
That is not a guarantee.
Well, see, I don't know about that. You're right. You're right. No, Justin, you're absolutely right. And that's something to consider. But
this release yeah, of see, the cast is what I was getting to. I'm sorry. I don't believe that it's going to be just a pilot because yes, they ended up yeah. gave us this information yeah. is what I'm getting at. Like, that's how I was. Sorry. I just wanted to get that last part out there yeah. because before it was like, okay, this isn't guaranteed. But look at this very, very informative cast list that we have. You know, they're not going to release that unless they are really, really planning on going through with this and have a good feeling about it.
100%. And I'm sorry. I got excited when you said that because it's a great point. And that is, I was thinking the same exact thing, which is the last time I think I talked about this, I think In Deep Geek came on the show and we were talking about the prequel. And one of the thing prequel, or you're right, it's not really a prequel. It's just a story set in the same world that takes place before this story, because it's not in the same, like even this article we were looking at that I had sent you from, where was it from again? From Winter is Coming.
Yes.
They were saying, oh, this looks like a Lannister. This looks like a thing. And I'm like, I don't think we should even be saying that. Like, I don't know as much about the books as you do, but now after reading Fire and Blood and kind of thinking about it more, now I understand that this is taking place 1,000 or thousands of years 8, before 000. Any of that stuff even happened. So these families have come and gone. It's not guaranteed. I don't know if George has said which families were that old and which weren't. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, we do have some information. Think if you're gonna do this akin to our world, like Neolithic Egypt would be the time period.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Like just as like a little bit of a marker for you. And that's what's so great. So good news on a few fronts. Like I was saying, we have spinoff news, but we have more concrete evidence that this is going to really be a show because they've given us a vast amount of information about who's going to be in it. So that right there, Dane thumbs up, right?
Definitely.
Because you know, I
agree with you on
some
that
other people
too.
Know.
That's what
they're not releasing that stuff if they don't have faith in it.
100%
setting themselves up for disaster.
Yep. That's what I was that's what I was saying the last time Robert and I talked about it. We were like, well, they might not let's calm down. It might not go forward. At this point, it's going forward. They're not just shooting a pilot. They're shooting the whole season. HBO doesn't they release information differently. Look, when 8 years ago, who was that guy? Jonathan Safran Foer. I can't pronounce his name right. This big writer, he had written this great book, and then they got like Diane Keaton and Kathy Bates, and there was a huge star. I think it was like Sam Waterston and like these fantastic actors, and shot a pilot, and then they never went forward with it. And you know what? You know when everyone found out about it? After they shot the pilot. So yep. HBO does not do this. They don't release casts like this. They did this when they greenlit The Watchmen. And they only said, okay, we greenlit the pilot of The Watchmen. Well, guess what? They greenlit the series. They have greenlit this series. This is happening 100%. We're going to see this. Now, they may reshoot it like they did the original Game of Thrones pilot. Mm-hmm. There may be changes.
Which hopefully one day we'll see.
Yeah, I know. I'd love to see that. There may be changes that are made, but I think it's safe to say, and that's a good thing for us to talk about today, 100%, this is happening not just as a pilot, as at least a first season. And in HBO's mind, this is a new series. They're setting mm-hmm. this in stone. There might be another one. We don't know. There could be another one or smaller miniseries. Well, but they're doing this one.
I'm pretty sure that it was five put out on spec, you know, scripts five different teams. And they are strongly considering two, and they're definitely strongly considering, and I'm with you, 99.9% of all my common sense, which isn't that much, tells me that this is going to happen for a few different reasons. I think that Game of Thrones is really in a very good spot when it comes to having a spinoff, because a lot of issues come along with having spinoffs of very, very popular television, films, and so on. We all have seen this time and time again because, it doesn't live up to the old one, you know, Star Wars. It doesn't, you know, live up to the original, blah, blah, blah. But if you can see, if you're watching the video, and for the podcast listeners, I've got Fire and Blood behind me and A World of Ice and Fire. The timing of Fire and Blood coming out is perfect because what are they doing? They're establishing a world, just characters. So that's why this point, has such a miles beyond other shows at having a great chance of being successful, because we are in love with the world, not just this particular story. We are, and this is what I've criticized George about in the past, fantastic writer, quality over quantity for him for sure, because he writes a world and lets the stories happen organically. So it doesn't work great for the saga, you know, A Song of Ice and Fire, that is still not complete, but it works great for stuff like this because we are familiar, like you said, who's going to be a Lannister, who's going to be a Stark. We do know for sure, unless something changes, there will be no Targaryens in this, because this is before their rule, but this is also far before they were not a prominent family in Valyria. There's lots of dragon lords and families.
I remember that. That's how Fire and Blood starts out, right? Talking about that.
George just mentioned that he doesn't plan on having Targaryens.
Yeah.
But we have an understanding of this world. So it has such a higher percentage of actually being successful. Because we, like you said, people are like, oh, this guy looks like a Lannister. This guy looks like a Stark. We do know in Game of Thrones, the television series is even established within the first few episodes where Ned is going through that book looking at
traits. That's what I meant to say is I know that they were Starks then, because I know about I know the stories of the Night King being a Stark and the ancient stories and all that, but I just meant as far as comparing it so closely to the current, like things have changed over 1,000 years. And I think that's going to be, I wanted to mention it because I think that's going to be part of the fun of this new show, which is kind of figuring out what this world is, seeing a character that has a last name of some character we know, and then seeing that they're in a totally different position socially, right?
Absolutely.
Seeing that the family is different, seeing how and letting that, and maybe that those are some subtle ways that the prequel can inform our viewing or our understanding of watching the original upon rewatches and fun stuff like that. But I don't know at this point in time how valuable it is to try to assign pictures of people to a family or to what they're going to do, other than to say, honestly, I look at it more like casting. When I looked at this cast picture, which is what I tweeted out, and I like that they did it this way too. HBO did that. They just showed us faces. Because when I look at it, I look at it and I think to myself, what kind of characters and would be in this world, you know? And look at these interesting faces and people with, like, you know, a lot of actors had like big eyes or strange shapes of faces. And, you know, it's interesting to me.
Absolutely is. And I see what you're saying there, because you always want to be careful not to depend too much on a very solid connection to especially for just show only watchers, because you will be disappointed. Like, I've always warned people against, they think they want to see Robert's Rebellion, even after seeing the flashbacks, excuse me, in the show. They don't. You don't want to see somebody else play Cersei Lannister. You don't. You are too attached to them. You know, the book readers had to go through it with the show, and you could not. People think fans don't always know what they want, is what I'm trying to say. There are certain features that Starks, Lannisters, Tullys, and so, you know, people from Dorne, they do have, and you can tell a few of these characters, specifically the large amount of diversity compared to our main cast, is due to them filming in the Summer Isles. And that's where you have that diversity, and they're going to be shooting on the Canary Islands, which is, I believe, right off of Spain. And they looked the film there before.
That I thought, and Ireland, they're still doing Ireland though, which is going to be, which is, that's the thing about this, is that I think one thing that I wanted to kind of hypothesize, and you would know better than I, is it seemed to me that they're because they're shooting in the Canary Islands and Ireland, which, I mean, Ireland can be very bright and beautiful. It's not all gloomy, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't have to be Winterfell, you know what I mean? It can be something actually quite magical. It's Ireland, bro. You know what I'm saying? I'm Irish, man. I got to stand up.
Danny boy.
I thought you were going to start singing Jump Around. That's like the Irish theme of my generation.
Terrible.
Sorry. You remember that, man? House of Pain, baby. Jump.
Oh, I do.
Jump,
I DJ'd jump. It. What you were saying,
what I'm saying is that we are forgetting that this thing, I think with the casting of the main casting is of Naomi Watts, right? Mm-hmm. And then you see a diverse cast and everybody loves that. And I love it too, because one of the things about Game of Thrones that makes it cool is the weirdness, diversity, uniqueness of each character. So I want to see that represented in the people. But
as long as it's authentic, I'm with it.
Yeah, of course. Of course. That goes without saying, right? And that's what we want from any show. And I think, though, that I was at least forgetting, and I think some people are too, that they keep on trying to say, no, look, a lot of this is going to be about, like, the Long Night, right? And so it's going to involve the Starks, and it's going to involve Winterfell. We're going to see Winterfell. We're going to see what happened back then, and we're going to see a lot of snow. There's going to be, I think, instead of fire and ice, we might get a little bit more of this tropical summer island feel, something we're not used to, not Dorne, but something different. Yeah. And my mind, that is, seems like that could also open up a lot of beautiful shots, a lot of great cinematography, a lot of beautiful clothes and buildings and things that we haven't seen in Game of Thrones. We've seen things that are a bit more stoic and less whimsical, you know? Yes. And I'd love to see that. I get the little island flavor in Game of Thrones. Sounds cool to me.
Well, what we're dealing with is a lot of, like what you said, is I totally agree with. You're dealing with the Age of Heroes, and that leads into the Long Night. Now, the Age of Heroes is akin to, again, like a mythology, you know, your Achilles, your Hercules, stuff like that. Mythic heroes that we see the ideologies in the characterization of our characters as Stoic Starks and so much.
Right.
They model themselves after people like Bran the Builder and so forth. So we are going to see, again, what George does so brilliantly is he gives us raw, believable stories with a high fantasy backdrop. That's where you see the whimsical is in the background, but in the forefront is diplomatic, struggles, torture and death through people trying politics, to claim power yeah. through warfare, so forth. So what we will see is what they say right here, the mysteries of the East to the Starks of legend. So it's like these people that Ned, if we're going to just dive into it a little bit here, like Ned probably thinks upon his ancestors, these famous Starks, people are always talking about the Starks and the role they played in the Long Night, as far as tales like Bale the Bard and stuff. That's not the Long Night, but you have all these famous heroes from this story that we have, and we have such a rich backstory. And again, we are invested in the world. Every house has symbolism, and we have a certain image in our head what a Tully is, what a Stark is, what a Lannister is. And that is going to play well. So they're going to be able to stay true to that, but they're also going to be able to give us a little bit of revision. What is that? Revisionist history.
Yes.
I guess you'd call it. Yes. We heard this happen.
I love that.
Okay, Bran the Builder didn't build Winterfell. He didn't build the Hightower. He didn't build Storm's End. That's literally impossible. Like, you get into like a Charlemagne or Alfred the Great conversation there, where it's like, these great people,
we
sometimes
see the
start
legend.
To think they might have been a lot of people's deeds combined together. Yep. You see this a lot with the Danes, the Viking sagas. You see this a lot. Ragnar Lothbrok was most likely a combination of at least five people. Yep. So we will see what is legend and what is fact, and they can play with that. And it's, I'll go off on my rant and shut up for 1 minute after this. But what I really like about this cast is two characters in particular here. Toby Regbo, he is in The Last Kingdom, which I recommend. It is it's Bernard Cromwell's books, the Saxon stories adapted to screen. The books are better, blah, blah, blah. Same story with everything. He also was in Rain, which is a terrible, terrible show, but he's a good actor. And then we have what is his name here? I'm not a huge fan of Harry Potter. Jamie Campbell Bauer, but he played Arthur in Camelot. And then we have the rest of these actors are not that, there's not a lot of big names, but the stuff they've done adheres to the fandom. There's voiceover from,
I was going to say the same thing, brother.
Television and games, things that translate. Cause let's look at our cast of Game of Thrones right now. You had Sean Bean. You didn't have what did Kit Harington do before this? You know what I mean? Not a lot. Daenerys, Emilia Clarke, she was in one terrible sci-fi show. They made stars. It's never smart to really, stack your deck to, have too many big names. I think Naomi Watts is going to be your centerpiece.
And that's cool. And I'm cool with that. And I like the people that you mentioned. And I like the fact that you mentioned that they all kind of have experience. I was thinking about this actually when I knew we were going to record, and I was thinking to myself, I've noticed this too. And then I kind of thought about it, and I thought about the faces again and casting and what this shows us about casting and how there are archetypes of fantasy and sci-fi that people look a certain way and they know they're going to be cast in it. And when they find their niche, they stick to it. I think of Katie Sackhoff from Battlestar Galactica. She kind of found a niche there. She was Starbuck, right? And then she's in The Flash. She does all these kind of little sci-fi movies. And for me, the only person that I knew straight up was the guy from Humans. Let's see. Oh, and I did recognize Alex Sharp as well, because I've seen this The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. I guess I saw some pictures of this or heard about it. Yeah, or that movie too. But for some reason, that one role that he was on, on the stage, I think, or I think it was, maybe it was a film. I don't remember, but I remember the weird title, and then I looked at his face and I remember him. But the guy from Humans right away, and I said, okay.
How do you say his name? Avino, I'm going to butcher this, Jeremiah.
Oh, you're asking the wrong. I'm from New Jersey, man. I would say Avino Jeremiah. That's what I'd say. I'd probably call him Ive, but that's just me. I say Ive here. He's got a look, man. You know what I mean? And in humans, they really concentrated on his eyes and his face. And there's a lot, he really put forth a lot of energy from that. And I remember at some points he didn't talk a lot in the show. And
conveyed a lot of emotion through his actual
That's expression. What I liked about these faces. I'm telling you, like, these people have great faces. It's a weird thing to say. I know everybody wants to know what family they're in or whatever. But for me, the thing that got me excited is a lot of times I'll see casting pictures. I'll see a slate of faces going to be in this new show. And I say, oh, okay, look, it looks like there's the lead guy. There's this. I look at this cast and I feel good about the decisions they're making. Because they just all are giving me some strong face, as Madonna would say back in the day. And I can see the characters coming from them. But right away, it did make me think that this Regbo dude definitely looks like a Stark. Now, I had to just say that. It's probably the picture they used, too. Because he was in the Last Kingdom, you know?
But here's the thing. Colored contacts can be used.
Of course. You never know.
And you looked at her dark hair. Yep. Before that's why You're again totally I really like right, how you dude. Brought up that we have to be careful about typecasting them for families.
Yeah,
but with Game of Thrones there is some kind of pride and on this one because it is more acceptable. Because usually what I do is I look at casting and I say, what have they done? Because that's how they get these jobs, is of what they've done.
Yeah,
what
I know. See, I didn't. When did you say that this time? What was your feeling on that? Because
I think it's really smart. I think that this is a very strong cast. Yeah. I don't get hyped very often, but this on every single level, it checks all my boxes. I was looking for the phrase. Again, like I said, they adhere to the fandoms that are usually connected with this. When you have people that are all the shows like Humans, Harlots, the Harry Potter, Last Kingdom, Camelot, Sweeney Todd, these are all shows, films, products, projects that adhere to the Song of Ice and Fire world. These are all things that translate. People that like The Last Kingdom are going to like Game of Thrones, most likely, correct? Yeah. You're really checking a lot of boxes here. So. And these are also strong actors. Britain, Europe in general has a very strong theater presence because they obviously Hollywood is here. So you have a lot of great stage actors.
That's what I saw.
And they've picked up
two
of them as well.
Yep.
And like those can be, the stage is above and beyond for me just when it comes to talent.
I agree, man. That's what I loved about Game of Thrones. And the other thing too is this. Let's not forget, they cast Naomi Watts. They also cast a dude from Poldark, and they made a separate announcement about that. And when they make a separate announcement, they have to do that. You know what I mean? Like, when an actor is hired, the way it is announced, the way the credits are on screen, even the way that the order their name is put in a press release with other actors is negotiated upon. So top billing doesn't just mean credits. It means the way you are treated across the board. You know, it's
people
like,
starred in movies.
It's a different card you get. So Naomi Watts, trust me, everything is going to say Naomi Watts for this. Everything is going to have her name on it. And I got the feeling from the way it was announced that the Poldark guy, whose name I'm forgetting right now, I don't watch Poldark, but I remember.
It's Josh Whitehouse.
Okay. I believe we're going to find that he's equal to Naomi Watts in the show, but he's getting second billing. He's getting lower billing. All these people are getting announced right now, again, because of the status they have earned by being in the industry. Mm-hmm. But let's not forget that, as we found with Game of Thrones, with some people who we never heard of before, and they become like big fans, like say a Hodor, you know, someone like that who is like a DJ, you know, a guy like Bron, who becomes a favorite. You know, wouldn't know. I just think that this makes me feel more confident on the that they're continuing the they're continuing what they did with Game of Thrones, the quality of production, of follow through from the smallest detail to the largest, and the change will be at the top. And that I think I'm almost a little bit, I have to be honest with you here, because we're live on a YouTube being recorded and my face is
I here. Record all conversations.
You record all conversations for posterity, just like Nixon. I'm gonna start calling you Tricky Justin.
I like Nixon. He's a good statesman.
Oh no. We're gonna have Shut to up. Have a conversation right. about that.
I'm not cutting.
I'm Get just kidding, dude. I'm kidding with you. Man, we digressed. I forgot. I'm more excited. I feel like the possibilities for this are pretty endless. And the reason why is because I feel that Dan and Dave were behind an eight ball with it being the main series, having not been published yet, not finished, a rabid fandom who knows every effing detail of everything that's going to happen. And this show is totally different. It's in a world we love. It's in a world book readers love. Book readers don't know information. The information that's contained in the show is going to be largely new to them. And some of the information that they learned in books is going to be, like you said, changed and different. And people are going to be like, that's not what it said in the book. And then people are like, oh, wait, maybe George was saying it was a myth and a legend. There's going to be.
And that's what's great. Know, yeah.
That's fun to me.
Sorry,
that's
I feel like I'm interrupting.
No, no, not at all. I'm just getting excited because I see the way in the fandom some of these more negative type debates. Oh, Dan and Dave tanked it. They blah, blah, blah. They have no respect for it. They're lazy. All this type of stuff, which I find to be not really coherent arguments, are kind of going to vanish because it's something new. You know, you're not, you don't have to hold it up against it. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break here to do a mid-ad break for cufflinks.com. And I got to admit, Justin and I were talking so much, I forgot to do it. So I'm taping this after Justin left. So Justin is with me in spirit, but I'll tell you what, I'm still wearing my Hand of the King pin, and I kind of love it, and I'm wearing it to go pick up my kid from school in about 15 minutes. But go to cufflinks.com/DVR, and you can be like me. You can step out your house and elevate your look. Sometimes it's just that little extra something that makes you feel cool, gives you confidence, or you just want to show off, you know, you just want to connect with another fan or another, it's your sports team or your college alma mater. And this month, it's 30% off all NFL and NCAA. So go over to cufflinks.com/DVR, use the code FOOTBALL30. This weekend, we got the playoffs going on. You know, I'm running a pick'em on our Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/group/dailyDVR. The announcement at the top of the page, you put in the comments your pick. If you win, you'll be entered. I'm saying if you win, you'll be entered because we may have multiple winners. So I want to cover that area. It might only be one, though. You get all four right, you get to pick your choice of four prizes from cufflinks.com. We've got great stuff, so go check that out. But really what you need to do is go to cufflinks.com. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR, use code DVR20, get 20% off your order, no minimum, and all month long, use code FOOTBALL30. And you know what? When you're at cufflinks.com, just look around because you're going to see a whole host of other codes and sales that they've got going on, new products. It's always happening at cufflinks.com, cufflinks.com/DVR. Now back to Justin and me. Yeah.
This era, like you said, is documented in these books behind me, but it is documented. This is like the advantages to doing the sagas, the Viking sagas, is that this is spoken word tale. You know, this is not exact historical accounts. So in our fake lore or history, you know, that is so rich in this, this has never been presented as fact. And you see them questioning some of the very aspects that this series, because this is a very, pretty big time span. I can't say with any confidence exactly what will be covered in this.
Yeah.
I would hope to see a little bit. I'm thinking it's going to be the end of the Age of Heroes, and we'll get to see what those heroes really were, who they were, if they were, and then going into a similar predicament. I don't want to see a replaying of the Walkers coming again. I don't think they'll do that. This is a smart pick because, like you said, you can't say, oh, it's not like that in the books. Right. Because, you know, I've learned to be good with Dan and Dave because, first off, I've been writing again. Second off, they adapted the unadaptable. George wrote these books because he was pissed at Hollywood and said, I'll make something just so batshit crazy, nobody can adapt it. And then he gave it to two guys. No offense to them because they've done a wonderful job. Their resume is put together. Don't give them that
I don't disagree. Yeah, I'm not going to say. Yeah,
they didn't.
Yeah, there's a lot to complain about. And I have complaints. And I see now that when I look back, and I rewatch, which I'm now going to soon be starting my rewatch, and I watch the first season, I see a potential of something that when I look at the last couple of seasons, I see how it's using the word rushed is not wrong. I don't think that's wrong. That's not a wrong word. I don't like lazy or like they're doing it on purpose to hurt the fan. That's what I mean, like these kind of emotional reactions. I think that what you do and what others do and what I have done to fairly criticize decisions that were made or offer alternatives, ways of dealing with a time crunch or something of that nature, I just meant that they were behind the eight ball. There was no, HBO could have chosen George Lucas to adapt George R. R. Martin, and all the George R. R. Martin fans would then say that George Lucas never had any talent. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's
there,
what
there
I mean.
Might
it's
be
like,
an argument for that. But yeah, exactly right.
You know what I mean? They were up against the bat. I mean, it's like adapting Lord of the Rings. You know what I mean? Like, for Peter Jackson, the spectacle in the theater could allow that story to be told, but it's been so long, but it's so fresh and unfinished.
Are you recreating the feeling?
Yes.
Are you recreating the exact story? Right. And the issue that you, when you, whether, where you can be correctly and kind of constructively criticizing Dan and Dave is when they break in-world rules that they've established themselves. Those are undeniable plot holes.
Exactly.
Those are unacceptable. Yep. That's poor writing. Don't say a white can't walk south of the wall and then have them do it. Don't say they can't swim and the next scene have them do it. It's almost like they have slipped up in issues of pacing, and it really started right where you have the books split into Feasts for Crows and Dance.
Without a doubt.
You had George who could not consolidate POVs in the one book, and you can almost willy-nilly in a book change your POVs far easier than you can on a television show, because your threads really need to be visually sticking together a lot more. I'm not saying it very well, but you get what I mean. Visually, they have to make a lot more sense than just jumping from like Tyrion and Essos to like Ramsay. Like usually the threads need to be more connected. There needs to be a few more, you know, wires to them. So George couldn't do that with a book. So there's really no reason to get mad at him for Dorne and stuff like that, because Jaime Lannister was at this part in the road, which you on the podcast cannot, they just think I'm a crazy person. and Cersei was here.
Yes.
So they couldn't have the break because they're not aligned, because that's why they split it into two books, because the time, I mean, there was consolidation of time. You thought about doing a 5-year gap that didn't happen, all this stuff. But I agree. I think that this is smart. And it's smart because even like you're a casual viewer, I would say, of Game of Thrones. You're getting more into it now, but even you read Fire and Blood. So you are attached to the world.
I mean, I would say I'm more than a casual as a podcast. I would say I'm a casual. I would say that I'm on the highest end of watching the show, but I am on the middle end of the world itself, because it includes the books and the fandom, which I dip my toes into, and I talk to fellas like you or Robert or Matt or people who are, you know,
it's a ladder. But yeah, I didn't
I'm not.
Like,
yeah, I'm not totally.
Because here's me, and then there's Robert way up here.
Well, I'm below you.
So as content creators,
yes, but you're lobbies. The point you're making though, and that's why I got so hyped and so excited and psyched. I'm going to use the old 80s words we say instead of hyped. We said psyched. I was so psyched. It's boss, bro. What they used to say in Boston? It's hella. You could say that. It's hella good, man. Wicked good. That's it. Wicked good. Yes, it's wicked good. So it wicked goodly opened me up to the whole world, Fire and Blood, got me thinking about how Game of Thrones does not exist just in that time period, right? Yep. Opened me up to seeing how stories in other time periods are just as important. You know what I mean? And I think that's an important part, because an example I'll bring up is Breaking Bad to Better Call Saul. A lot of people said, why the heck do I want to watch Better Call Saul when all it's going to be about is how a guy became a shifty enough lawyer to work for the star of the other show? All he was his lawyer. Why do I care about that? So they gave it stakes and invested by making Mike a part of the show, and they gave it a little bit more stakes, you know? With this show, I think the world gains stakes by Fire and Blood, World of Ice and Fire. And I think one thing I did want to quickly mention, we can talk about it after you make your point, is I feel like we should get ready to see more clues to that in the final season of Game of Thrones itself. I think the whole, it will open up, the history will open up in this final season in ways to frame it in ways that we have not previously seen in the seasons before, which I find exciting. And the fact that they're ready to shoot this in the spring. So they're going to be shooting this in April, right? In a couple, like 3-4 months when the show premieres, they're going to be shooting the prequel, which means that they've already finished it. So they can use that as a basis to do clues between the two seasons and link them and have fun with them on a grander vision, not character based.
Because it's all about perspective, right? Like you brought up Better Call Saul. Saul was a very layered character. They felt like he could be more than just a shyster. And that's what they did. They had a far higher mountain to climb with Better Call Saul than they do with this. because you're right. And then they had to use actual characters to tie in and to get people from Breaking Bad. They're like, I want to see Breaking Bad, the prequel, or the Breaking Bad 2. It's called High Concept. Make it for everybody. The dummies.
Yeah. The shark in the water.
Yeah. You know, selling wolf tickets, sheeple. but anyways, that's a far larger task to be able to pull off. With this, you have to look at it as Ned and John and Rob and Jamie, they all live with like these ideals, and they base their morals in the way they conduct themselves off of their past, their history, their lineage, the actual legacy of their family. A lot, you see this a lot with Tywin. So now we get to see what, you know, because it's always like, oh, it's always so great. Time, everything ages so well, like wine, right? All these history does in general. It's like, oh, how fantastic was this? And it's like, no, it's probably pretty fucking horrible for everybody involved. So it's, you know, it's more about perspective, changing perspective. And you don't have to tie in exact characters. You just have to know that these people and what's happening to them will later be interpreted. It's kind of like we're in the know. We're like, oh, look at how they were thinking about, Bran the Builder, if he's in it, or Lan the Clever.
That's a great point. That makes the viewer, even the viewer who is just a viewer, not a book reader, feel a little bit of sense of superiority or in the club by making those connections. That's a great point, dude. Now, I had a question for you, which I've found this interesting, and this is kind of a greater Game of Thrones question, but it plays into exactly what you're talking about. When I first started getting into this show and then finding out about the books and learning, one of the things that I found fascinating was, and this is a fandom question too, where so many fans, so many of the fans of Game of Thrones are kind of like medieval history and fantasy fans. It is fantasy, right? And they are thusly a bit obsessed with the rules of the world, like guest rights and who will be king and legacy and how a sword properly passes through a family. Does that still mean it's in the family? Like all of these things. Now, but what I have seen from Game of Thrones and what I've read of George as a man, to me, the point of all this stuff in Game of Thrones and what I think that we'll see and what I've seen in the Game of Thrones, this series is when what I think we're going to see in the prequel is just as we find in real life that all of these rules and doctrine and all of this type of stuff never actually existed. It was always from the point of inception, it was always inspirational or aspirational rather than have to have ever existed or have anyone ever lived in that fashion. And one of the things I've seen from Game of Thrones is that all of these rules, like for instance, I'm in a Facebook group and the other day somebody was talking about, is John really the king? They talked about this little snippet of the new episode, right? Of the first episode.
Like Succession.
Yeah.
They're
Succession, right. Is he really the king or whatever? And I wanted to make the point, why does that even matter? Like, I think the point of Game of Thrones and the point that George is trying to say is this is all bullshit. It's always decided by the rich and the powerful. Is John king? If he says he's king, he's king. It's the same reason why Cersei's king is because she said she was king. And then I still see people arguing that she can't be king because she doesn't have Targaryen blood or something. And the Targaryens must be the kings. And then I'm reading Fire and Blood. It's like they're kings because they took it over. Yeah, they took it over by power is what got them the crown. All of these rules and traditions,
social constructs.
Yes, and norms are there to basically keep the people in line and keep the powerful powerful. And the point of Game of Thrones and George's whole point is that war is terrible. The powerful always screw over the weak. And that the really the only way you're ever going to take it back is for the is to rise up. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. And every character, you're absolutely right. Look at Jon Snow. Yeah,
you have to John take Snow,
you're
going to
go by
destiny.
Succession. Yeah. Jon Snow is the rightful heir. That's the whole point of his character, in my opinion, is to show you the whole time that people are arguing, and even the succession in their own world for Cersei, it should be like a Blackwood or something. Cersei should not have ascended, but it's just kind of like a
dictatorship. That's what I'm saying. When you say things like that, it shows that really it doesn't matter because that rule was set up by someone who got to power through that rule.
Yes. George is definitely what you're saying is correct. He is definitely trying to make that crystal clear because your main character, not really main character, whatever. Jon Snow,
he is. Yeah. Dude, he's the hero. Here.
He is, you know, at the wall with a bunch of rapists and all this. And the whole time, he is the one with the royal blood.
Yes.
He's the one that actually has shown, arguably the actual intelligence to be able to rule, meaning he is
actually has the moral fortitude that is who he is as a person.
He deals with the wildlings. He sees the greater good. Yes. He's willing to do, he's not a populist like somebody I know, President Trump. he's not playing to the room. That's why he gets stabbed at the wall. Also in the books, one walks on some people and so forth. It's not great. But, you know, people are pissed that he let the wildlings through. But he's like, listen, dummies, everybody's going to die. And they're like, well, who are you? He's like, well, I'm nobody. But in all reality, if you adhere to even their rules, he is the king. So it's making you question all those things. And
he's
that's the
king
great
like
part
twice over, you know, by legend and by their rule. So I think I just wanted to make that – I just wanted to see that I was getting that right and that in the community that's widely seen because to me, I think it's going to be – it's utterly fascinating and I think that that's one of the coolest parts of Game of Thrones is that I've always been a person who's believed that. Like when I was a little kid and they told me, you know, like do unto others as you – I remember saying to my mom at some point or asking a teacher like – was there ever a society where they actually did that? And you know, and then the teacher being like, well, no, but you know, we try. And I say, so it was always aspirational. Everything is always
people like Jefferson.
Yes. Yeah.
He's so fascinating. I won't get into it, but it's just such a great, I think it kind of speaks to what you're talking to, a guy that literally, you know, didn't believe in slavery, but had a whole bunch of slaves. And also, if you read a lot of his works, has some pretty racist stuff in there, but also has these ideals that are against it. He's like internal conflict.
Yep,
exactly. It's like threat level midnight with that guy. You know, he's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Just like nobody is.
It's perfect.
Game of Thrones with Ned Stark killing a man that's telling the truth. And we love
exactly.
Ned Stark. We see that he's telling the truth. They don't hide that from you. They're real.
Yep.
And you're like those guys.
That's the funny thing, right? Is that everyone always argues why didn't Ned listen and go away? Why didn't he kill Cersei when he had the chance? And well, in the very beginning, if Ned had just listened to that dude and said, let's go investigate this now, they would have known who the real, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, we don't know. The story would have been different, but I'm just saying, I think I like that we're finding
what is honor
that
in a dishonorable
there.
World.
Yes. And what you're saying is absolutely true. It's the human condition to live in contradiction and to constantly go against our words with our actions or vice versa. And I like the fact that George rounds that out, not only on the character level, but takes it to such a large historical level that the foundations of an entire society could be based upon a falsehood, which I think is fascinating. And it's a sci-fi kind of idea that I've long loved in short stories. You know, there's so many fun stories. I was just watching Stargate Universe. I don't know if you've ever watched that. And they go back in time. And at one point in the show, they find an entire society based on a copy of them from another timeline. They created the society. And they're like, we did this? Well, our other people did it. No, it was us. And that is like the ultimate in that. You know what I mean? So I find that to be fascinating. And I love the way we're going to be able to see that in this. And I think it's going to be fun for book readers to have those quandaries. And I look forward to learning from so many of you all the little after the episode. Oh, that was a callback to this or that, you know, that's going to be fun.
First off, and again, when I said casual, I meant casual as a content creator. Cause you're obviously very, very bright and known. There's people that like know about Game of Thrones.
No,
there's
I
people
know.
That watch Game of Thrones.
Dude, they do it
there's
every
people
day.
That have
they
the
live
map
in the
of
world.
Westeros on the refrigerator.
Yes.
Then there's people that know how many kilometers from Winterfell to,
buddy. Yeah.
Whatever. King's Landing, or so forth. And it's like you get crazier and crazier, but I always do get a little bit upset with people because the books now, you do have a lot more like relatable, like 14th, 15th century, European medieval period stuff. You have castellans, you know what I mean? Like they address the households far more with like what's going on when Ned leaves Winterfell, like who, you know, who is taking care of appointments and so forth. I can't even remember the title of that steward or whatever. But anyway, so like they do adhere to that. But even like people like Preston Jacobs has pointed out that the medicine in Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire proper, is more akin to 18th century and stuff. So it's really all over the place and he mixes and matches. You can't ever argue things like using just straight medieval history if it has not been referenced in world. You know, like I hate it when people bring that up. They're like, well, they couldn't do this because it's like, listen, that's not a rule in this fantasy.
Yeah, it's a different world. You're absolutely
right about that. You're talking about crazy stuff. It's just like, I'm going to watch Grey's Anatomy and be like, no, that bypass should have been done like this, you know?
Well, I think that's why it's best to do it thematically and not really historically. And it's fun. Like on Winterfell, Mike interviewed some medieval historians. And what they talked about is specific instances in which George has used this. And the guy was awesome. Go back if everyone wants to go back on Winterfell and find that episode. I don't have it in front of me right now. We did it last season. But it was a fun episode because that's a point he made too, is he would make the point over and over again. I'm going to talk about real history, But we're not talking about real history. We're talking about a made-up book, and he has complete license to do whatever he wants. If the machine works differently in A Song of Ice and Fire, that's okay, because literally the physics of that world are different than the physics of our universe. It inhabits an alternate dimension of time and space that we do not understand.
You know me, you know, like, and I'm going to do this really quick, the quick breakdown. And because what you're saying about looking forward to, you know, every learning from people, let's be careful with that. These explain people. There's only a few, like Robert. Hell yeah, I'll sit down and listen to him. History of Westeros, hell yeah, I'll sit down and listen to them. A lot of other people, they're just fans of a television show. They don't need to be explaining things to people. We're not babies. Nobody's a baby. You need to talk about it, have a discussion. Yeah. So what I really loved, and Vanessa Cole, I think you got to work with her, Watchers on the Wall writer.
Westworld too.
Yes, yes. Wonderful artist, wonderful person. Been lucky enough via Robert contributed to do some live streams with her.
Big Westworld.
She came out and she just did I don't know if she did an article, but she tweeted out what happens here in this little 8 seconds where Sansa is welcoming Dany to Winterfell. And, you know, because you've got all the people saying, look at all the hidden meaning behind this, and let me explain this 8 second clip. So I'm going to play this 8 second clip and essentially just say what Vanessa said, because she's a rational person. There's a difference between being passionate, which we all are, and then just thinking that you're like a rocket scientist because you love a show so much. So this is the clip for you on the video watching it. We've got Jorah, Dany walking. Winterfell is yours, your grace. So, of course, everybody thinks that Winterfell is now Targaryen rule. No, same as when Robert went there. It's just like, make yourself at home. That's what they're saying. Make yourself at home. Nobody needs to make an explain video about that. Vanessa nailed it with a tweet. It's like, make yourself at home.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the same thing they said. It's like, don't make a video. It's like, you cucks. Sorry.
No. Well, I think, you know, people want, I see what your point is. And I think that people want to explore and have fun, but I think it's verbiage too. And there's a difference between explain and explore. And I think that we're both more interested in exploration, because within that, it's fun to have a little bit of a hypothesis, but I absolutely agree with you. There is a trend of very serious toned, this is the real meaning of it. And that's the kind
I put a red arrow in my thumbnail. This is what's really happening. I'm an asshole.
You have to deal with that a little bit more than me in the YouTube world. We should do a podcast called YouTube Podcast, and just where I talk about everyone podcasting is chill. Nobody says anything bad to me. It's all great. And then you're like, someone just said that I should stick my head in my hiney.
I've been told to get AIDS so many times. Yeah, it's like, I'm trying. You know what I mean? I'm going for the test.
People have always been nice. The only thing anyone ever said about me is I was pedantic and a bit arrogant. And I said, well, that's actually true. I have to admit that. I'm you know, I am.
No, but you know your pedantic stuff. You've worked in the industry. You're well versed. You're well read. You know what I mean? Like, didn't mean any insult by saying casual fan. I just mean for this thing, because I'm casual when it comes down to it, because there's just so many layers. Like, Robert's my go-to. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, in History of Westeros, I've learned so much through them. They are smart, but also just because they're very well-read on the source material.
And they have perspective. That's an important part of it, is perspective, is to constantly remind the people listening and yourself, you're talking about a story that someone created. And no matter how many note cards or books or graphs or whatever George did, there's certain times when he just goes with it. There's a lot of times. It's just like when you're on a – it's just like – my great example is within Game of Thrones. When they were shooting the Battle of the Bastards, they originally had an entirely different choreographed battle that they had spent months preparing, that they had budgeted for, and they couldn't do it. The location and the weather and everything that was happening prevented them from doing it. So on the spot, they used a different kind of historical battle they had kind of thought of as a plan B. And that's what we see on the screen. And when everyone saw it, their eyes popped out of their head because it was absolutely amazing. And let me tell you something.
Hannibal, I believe.
Yeah. They, and that is a greatest example ever of making it up as you go along, which supposedly is the worst thing you can do in all of fandom. Fans of things hate it. Oh, this wasn't a planned out universe. This wasn't an extended universe. They made it up. It's all made up. Okay, I went on a little rant. It's all made up.
You're right, though.
The best ideas come by accident. The best ideas that I've ever had as a writer, a filmmaker, a podcaster happened either by accident or because my resources were low, because I had no other choice. My back was against a wall and I made the choice and I did something different, you know?
And that's the thing about television. You can't just not put out a book. HBO's like, where's the next episode?
They have to do it.
They're planning on doing an Agincourt Core type deal. Right. And now you're right though. That happened. I think it was going to be a more Agincourt set up, and then they went with Hannibal in Rome at Carnet, I believe it's called, where they get encircled.
You're right.
That on the fly, you know, like you said,
that's why
people like Robert in History of Westeros, because they are teaching me something. First off, they're not so pompous that they say they are, because I don't like hearing that, but they are, because they're well read, and also they're well read
on
George's other works, and that's what's really important to know. Who is writing this? George has that short story, The Hero, where honor literally kills the character. You know, he has all of his medals on, and he's at this another planet that has higher gravity.
Oh, that's cool.
And they crush through him. So his medals, honor literally kills him. What kills Ned Stark? What kills honor? You know, so these things are, they're trends, they're cyclic, whatever you want to call them. And
that's pride too. That's pride too. Needing to show it, needing to let everyone know.
Look what I did.
Right. Whenever there's when that opportunity comes to shine, I will do it. I will take that up. You know what I mean? It's like we see in the internet world. I'm going to be the first one to be sad about something. I'm so sad. Right. That was horrible. Okay, go have some toast. We need to get on with our day.
Take a Xanax. It's rough though, because then your videos, and when you're releasing on YouTube, you want to be the first out with something, and it's like, guess what? You guys didn't notice. Look what I know. It's the look what I fucking know show.
Well, it's attitude, and I think that's what I hope. I'm hoping, and what we're talking about is I mean that's not going to change, but I think that the general attitude of the kind of book versus TV, or which is so much less now too, I actually think leading into the final season, my like fourth year of being in the there's no book, right? My fourth year of being in this fandom, really doing the podcast and really being in it more, even in the off season. I'm probably a little bit more in it this off season than I was even the last one. I see a more of a coalescing, and I think the prequel was a part of that, because I think people are seeing, oh, hey, we're going to kind of be in this together, and we can kind of explore and learn. And like I say, and you're saying, we're going to find out a lot of things were legend. They really were legend for a reason, because they didn't happen that way. And we see that in, that's what I liked about Fire and Blood too. Like when they brought up a Targaryen exceptionalism and how they just basically changed the rule, you know? Oh, Targaryens are different type of people, so they can marry their brothers and sisters. You know, they're not regular people. And we see that in real life too. And that has, you know, George is very progressive and these ideas are important to him. So I look forward to what I see in this prequel so far with the casting, the rollout. Everything signals to me Jane Goldman, the director that they've chosen for the pilot. She's fantastic too. She has a fandom in her blood and has been working on stuff within this for a long period of time. I think that we're going to see a continuation, and actually I feel like this is going to be a little, I'm kind of feeling like it might be better. I don't know if it's too early to say a Better Call Saul versus Breaking Bad. I mean, I don't want to be one of the YouTube people like you're talking about. Like, guess what? It's better already. I haven't seen it, but I'm just getting a feeling of this.
Everything points to that.
Yes. It's really, I've been around long enough, and I've been a fan of TV and film, and you can sometimes feel something's going off the rails. You know what I'm saying? Uh-oh, you know, George is using a lot of green screen for the prequels. Mm-hmm. I don't get this feeling here. I get a feeling that this is going to be so quality that they are actually stepping up from what is to
it's
me.
It's going to be more inclusive.
Yep.
More inclusive. It's better for fans. It's better from a thematic standpoint. And it's better,
worldwide,
like we're talking about the fandom with the this poisonous is, yeah. talk of that's not how it happened in the books.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that's stated about this time period in the books, I got a graph up on the screen right here from Reddit, the land of terrible people. I hate you people on Reddit. I've been banned a few times. You know, like there's vast amounts of time that are unaccounted for here. And it's all just legend. Yep. It's been conveyed as legend. It was never a matter of fact. And this, so this will lead to less of that pompous, because I didn't read the books until the third season.
Yeah.
You know, I watched the show and I almost turned it off and put back on the Borgias the first time because I was like, I don't like magic shit. That's how I was. That's how I was. And
I have to admit that when I first started watching the show and I put out on Podcast Winterfell last season, actually, you should go back and listen to it, Justin. I'll send you a link to it. It's the first time it was me, Matt, who created Podcast Winterfell, Heath, and I think Donald. We were on a podcast talking about something different, and then one of us said, oh, hey, did anybody watch that Game of Thrones show? And then we just started, and none of us had read the books. I had and I'm a huge geek, dude, and I had never even heard of Game of Thrones, bro. People talk about Game of Thrones who love it. Like, it was so huge before the show. It was not. I mean, it had a big fandom, but I mean, I heard more about Ringworld than I heard about Game of Thrones or, like, you know, the so many other different weird series.
Tolkien had really just had a
hold on it.
Yeah,
a stranglehold.
And the only YouTubers that can really, what I've found out through my YouTube Confidential, well, I haven't done one with History of Westeros, but History of Westeros has, they were blogging and they had their website before the show. So they were literally part of the fandom before.
Well,
so
you
they,
know
they,
who started History of Westeros? It was Steve.
He's no longer with us.
And
now.
Steve, yeah, well, Steve was a pal of mine and we were on through the internet. I didn't know him personally. But he called into Lost Mythos. We talked about Lost. We were on the Black Rock. He was a really cool guy, man. And I'm telling you what, yeah, it's RIP, dude. He was a really cool guy because he had a great perspective. He was super funny. And
I heard he was a lot of fun.
Yes, dude. He would have slayed this type of talk, like just not giving it any time because he was just all about loving things and appreciating the fandom, and he was a really cool dude. And it's really
awesome. Yeah,
he
wasn't analytic.
No, not at all. Not at all, dude. Not at all. He was a lot of fun. And he was a really cool guy, man. And he would be super proud to see what History of Westeros is now. Mm-hmm. And it's actually something I think more different and way like status wise more than I think what Steve would have ever thought it was, because he was the friggin' Italian, you know what I'm saying? Like,
I didn't know him. I just heard about him.
Well, I know. I didn't know him personally. I knew him from Lost. We would, you know, and I was on shows with him and he called into Lost Mythos.
It's more about the community building.
Yes.
And then
that's what I'm saying.
Over, they have taken it more to, like, it's almost, I love it. It's
perfect. Oh, they're great, dude.
It's they put together like a well, thought out, well studied lecture.
Yes, I have nothing ever negative to say about anybody. History of Westeros, that to me, that's why I'll tell you what, and we're talking podcasts now. I'll say it. When Matt handed over Podcast Winterfell, one of the first things I said is, I can't be History of Westeros. I can be, and that's why I concentrated more on what I'm good at, which is the television portion. And when I talk about it, I try to talk more about that, you know,
That's high concept that appeals, you know, you can be the everyman.
Well, I mean, I knew that I couldn't, because I actually thought about, oh, maybe I should read the books now, because when it came to Lost, dude, I knew every freaking detail. You know what I'm saying?
You should have told,
like,
the writers. You should have told the writers if you knew all the details.
Oh, man. We're really going to have to edit this podcast now. Now
I'm sorry.
I'm lost. I'm just kidding. But it was – they live in that world. They inhabit that world. I lived in the world of Lost. I lived in it. I knew things. I felt like I could feel the characters. I felt like I could have went into the writer's room and written the show. You should have, like I said,
you should have done that.
Thanks. Well,
I love David Lindelof.
But I think that History of Westeros is doing it right, man. And they are the gold standard in this community.
They have one foot in reality still.
Yes, that's why I think when you look around and you see podcasters, content creators, if you don't have a sense of humor about yourself and what you're covering and the fandom, if you want to be a ranter, then that's what you're going to get. And that's why I say that in a long time, there's always going to be haters and stuff, but I think that, you know, I'm just glad going into this and I know that History Westeros has already said they're going to be covering the prequel series, and I'm super excited. I mean, I'm almost as excited to hear their first podcast after the prequel airs than I am to watch it, because I feel like I'll so understand where it fits within the world after. So shout out to, this is just, we should tell, we just did like 10 minutes of an appreciation.
Well, them, and I wanted to throw in the guy I did do the YouTube confidential with, Tony Teflon. A lot of people don't.
I know Tony.
He's a book reader.
He's great.
Great guy.
He's fantastic. Great guy. Yeah.
And he was,
I was on a show with him 2 years ago. I was on a show with him. And I think he's there's someone else I know that he works with a lot that I've seen his show too. Yeah, he's great, man.
Yeah, the Don Fight. Well, Tony, a lot of people don't know that. I mean, if you go and look at the dates on his videos, Tony is maybe I definitely haven't interviewed anybody that was first, because I don't do the YouTube confidential anymore. Side note, it was kind of a business thing too to get collaborations, it was a good experience, because I was fascinated with the fandom and those that has a very lackadaisical way of approaching it, but is a very knowledgeable man, and first off a very good man as well. Some people think he also comes off a little bit cocky, but I couldn't have been more surprised and happy when I finally hooked up with that guy, and I want to get him back on. He is very knowledgeable, and he was one of the first. People don't realize that, and he does get to that point where it's like people do deserve credit. People like him do deserve credit that maybe don't get it as much, and it's kind of,
well, that's, hey man, you know, the thing in the world of, one thing I think I've come to see is that in the world of YouTube and podcasting and all that, unfortunately, history is written by the victors, and you know, people will forever say that it's going to go down in history that like Serial was the first podcast that really caught on with people. And then the 10 years that I had been podcasting before Serial came out will be gone. You know what I mean? Like, no, it's like Marconi, man. You know, people are always going to take it away from you. And it's just, you're in there really for the fandom and the people who love it along with you. I mean, the only reason, I mean, I do it now and I'm able to make some money off of it, and that makes the wife happy and it makes me happy, and it gives me more time to be able to schedule and do fun things like this. But really the reason why I started doing it is because I love it. I mean, they used to call me Billy TV when I was a little kid, and I just love television and I love talking about it with people. It's the reason I worked in video stores. I worked in video stores so I could talk with people about movies and TV all day long. I love it. My dream in life would be to own a video store. If I won the lottery, I'd probably end up buying a video store.
That's a bad, no, Axel, don't.
I don't care.
I love the sentiment behind it, but black, no, don't.
I live in Portland. Justin, I live in Portland. Video stores here they do great. This is hipster heaven, dude. There? No, there's like 5 independent video stores within 10 minutes of me, dude. People love it out here, man. There's like brew pubs. I think there's probably a bar where you can throw an axe out here like there is in Pittsburgh.
I like that, but that's not a video store. Let's throw axes. But I love it too. I love people like you. Like, we can disagree. Like, Lost, I was poisoned against it in my writing courses because my teachers were like, they're not establishing antagonists. These writers don't know what they're doing.
So I'm 20. I could argue.
I'm like, they don't know what they're doing. And I'm still to this day 30. And they don't know what they're doing, and I've only watched like 2 episodes. But well, no, I like it because we can agree. and we can like we got really you really helped me through the Westworld season because I was having issues with like what was going on, and I still want
to.
I'm passionate.
We got to get back to that.
Come off so negative.
We've got a schedule. We've been talking about this a while, and you know what? One of these Thursday Fridays, we've got to just go back and go Westworld season two, looking back. Because
revisiting
it, because I think that there's some things that I need to look at again, and I think that maybe I can tell you to enjoy something and you might have a little more fun with it.
But we were polar opposites at the very end.
Yeah, I know.
If you look at our last analysis, we couldn't be more different or far apart.
That's cool.
That. It's nobody's trying to be right.
Yes.
I will try to convey how I feel as intelligently as possible, which I'm working on speaking clearly and not and yeah. Because if you say something very, very confidently and you don't mispronounce any words and you say a lot of stupid stuff on the internet, people think you're a genius. And a lot of people say a whole lot of nothing real well.
You know what? We should end the show on that, I think, Justin.
Yeah, we should end the show probably. But yeah, a lot of people say a whole lot of nothing real well. Yep. Very intelligible.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
Because we did. No, but seriously, this has been fun. I do want to wrap things up if that's okay.
Yeah, we go way over.
We talked about a lot of fun.
That's all I'm saying. We need the. I don't know if you're. I'm starting it up, so my Patreons are asking me.
What's that?
The Expanse.
Oh, the Expanse. Yes. Oh, when the Expanse comes back, it's going to be hard because on Amazon, but I think because I love the Expanse so much, I might do like one episode a week. What are you going to do? You're going to watch it Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm going to pirate it.
You're going to break in with your super crypto
skills? There's good people
skills?
And then there's me. So, no, my patrons want me to watch it. I know if anybody's listening to Amazon, I'm going to give you my money.
But are you going to watch it all and then
do
one at a time or talk about themes or what are you going to do?
Well, I usually end up talking about themes. I always feel like episode reviews I'm late to the party on. Especially when I'm late to the party on a series, but Black Mirror is a good example of I've had some success with analyzing that, not explaining it because I'm not pompous. But I really feel that there's a large demand. And when it comes to Patreon, the people that are on my Patreon, I mean, what they want is not only what they deserve because they're helping me, but they're also very intelligent. So they always, so far, have convinced me to watch a projects that I probably wouldn't have watched before, and I'm thankful I have. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like they get to know me just as much as I get to know them. So the Expanse is something that I've been getting pushed to watch. So I'm gonna have to backlog it and do it. But yeah, I'd be totally open to just doing a wide discussion and all that. I always fail deadlines, so like I don't like saying I always come out with these great ideas. I'm feeling good, and I'm like, I'm gonna do the every episode once every 2 days, and then
that's
three
why,
days later, I'm like, fuck it.
I know. I still owe a episode that I want to do going over the sixth episode of Haunting of Hill House, which I have plans. I took notes. I just haven't done the episode, but I really want to dive into it. With The Expanse, I am thinking about it. I'm just kind of bandying about whether I'm actually going to try. I've been saying since streaming came around, I said, you know what? Maybe it'd be fun to actually use some self-control and really watch one episode a week, like literally sit down and say every Monday at midnight or whatever, or 11 p.m., I'm going to watch The Expanse, and then I will podcast about it on Tuesday. And I've been thinking with The Expanse is maybe I maybe like it too much. That's the problem, is I don't have the self-control.
See, it's out of my wheelhouse, but I also thought Westworld would be out of my wheelhouse, and it wasn't. You have to understand that like Westworld is the exception when it comes to sci-fi for Justin Thomas. Yeah. I was not a fan, and now I realize that these shows, you know, really do speak to me because it's storytelling.
Dude, it's your mind. I'll tell you, The Expanse is fantastic, man. It's so great. It does take, for those who haven't seen it, they've admitted this in interviews, the first 3 to 5 episodes, they were trying to figure out how they were going to adapt these books. They had a plan that they kind of changed, and they simplified it and streamlined it, and they made the exact right choice. And that's an example of a fandom where there are books and there's the show, where you don't see a lot of the same kind of complaints because of the way that the story is so wide and encompassing The Expanse, that it kind of forms itself a little bit better for the TV adaptation and the way that they've done it. And I think that's really interesting. So
yeah, we talked about the medium as the message. You know, like it's not fair to say that film is a lesser medium than books. It's just so vastly different. It's so hard to do. And who wants to be the guy saying that's not how it was in the books? I have that shirt. Yeah. It was better in the books. Said every book. You can buy that.
You lost sight of the movement.
Yeah. Right, so man. Yeah, I had a fantastic time talking with you, Axel. We'll have to hook up and do it. I am going to still do my podcast about Two Broke Girls and My Mother, the Car.
Nice.
The two best series ever. Nice. Television. Look
that's
those up.
Awesome.
My Mother, the Car.
Are you going to do week by week, or are you going to think you're just going to stream them all? Because it's hard to stop yourself.
You know what My Mother, the Car is?
Yeah, I've seen the show. I remember.
It's so bad. I really want to. I would do nothing but live streams.
Enough to remember when the only thing that was on TV during the day and at night were black and white old weirdo TV shows. Mm-hmm. And I grew up on all of that stuff, man. It was wacky.
I have a theory that they're Mr. Ed, that the mom is the only normal one, and they're all actually cars.
Oh, dude. I think you're right about that. Vehicle. Well, because we know that it was really the prequel and the basis for Transformers. That's what,
it's based off the Bible.
Yeah, well, maybe. The Transformers Bible, Optimus Bible. Maybe we'll find that out.
I think that if what's his name?
It goes all back, far back.
What's his name that makes? If Michael Bay had a Bible, it would be all Old Testament.
Yes.
All Old Testament, just huge set pieces. He's like, and then God shot some flames down and the wolf turned into a robot.
You know what I was saying the other yesterday I talked about, or the other day I talked about the American Cinematographer, Society of Cinematographers did their 100 best. And I was talking about how some of these shots in the movies have created whole careers. And I feel like Michael Bay's entire career is based on the shot in Apocalypse Now when the helicopters are sweeping down and dropping the Agent Orange, and it's just like dun, dun, dun. It's like all bombast, not even taking into account the death and destruction that's happening. And that's like Michael Bay's whole entire career. We're going to blow up cities. Robots are going to fly. People are going to be inside robots and be thrown 300 feet into the air, then do a tuck roll and be fine. Like, it's just, that's the world we live in, baby.
Every man, salt of the earth, every woman's in a bikini. All these stupid NASA nerds don't know what they're doing. I hate smart people, intelligence. Oh, we need my oil drillers are the only, you can learn how to be an astronaut quicker than you can learn how to drill oil, which is not easy. But I'm going to make the argument that that's a stupid premise. Ben Affleck does it in the commentary. Right. He says he asked Michael how that would be possible, and he told him to shut the fuck up.
There you go. You know that Michael Bay's dad, that's for another podcast. But there was a great article about kind of the roots of Michael Bay. And, you know, he thinks he's not sure who his real father is. And it may have been John Frankenheimer, I think, or another big director. And he was adopted by another family. He really is pretty fascinating, actually, as a Hollywood story. One day someone will make the Michael Bay story, and it's going to be super fascinating and a lot better than Transformers Part 9.
I heard he only hangs out with like engineers, people that like make jet planes and stuff. He doesn't hang with a usual Hollywood crew. He gets the salt of the earth, fellas, you know. Hey, but at least he knows what he is. He's not like, at this deep story that he's like, I'm gonna blow some shit up. It's gonna be
that's
awesome.
True. America. That is true. That is true.
I don't even want to speak on Benghazi, but 13 hours is one hell of a movie.
Yeah. There you go, baby.
It is what it is. Thanks for having me on, man. We went forever, but it's always a pleasure. Make sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel. Again, make sure to follow me on MapQuest.
MapQuest.
I'm gonna be using that joke for a
while. Wait, you gotta get you didn't give the coordinates.
I don't know. It's Asia. It's somewhere in Asia right now. Oh,
okay. All right. So, Asian Pacific. Yeah,
I don't want people to really find
it. It moves. You're on the Lost Island. It moves. Uh-oh, spoiler.
Oh, God. Ugh.
All right, I'm going to let it go. I'm going to let that lost comment go because Justin,
I think that I respect it because I respect you.
You should watch it, dude. You're going to love it. It's been fantastic having you on the show, and thanks everybody for listening. Daily DVR. Find us at dvrpodcast.com, on the Twitter at dvrpodcast. Join the Facebook. I'm running a contest. Well, we're running a contest. This weekend, go to the Facebook group, Daily DVR. What is it? Facebook.com/group/DailyDVR, whatever. And join. At the top announcement, you can make your picks for this weekend's NFL divisional games. If you are correct, you will be entered to win one of four Cufflinks.com prizes that are also on the Facebook page. So take a look. We're having a lot of fun. And email me, dvrpodcast@gmail.com. I'll be back on Monday. As per the usual, I think on Monday I'm going to be talking about films to look for. There was a great article of like 20 films to look forward to in 2019, as well as I'm going to preview a little bit of True Detective because we will be covering True Detective every single week on Daily DVR. Every Wednesday will be True Detective Wednesday, and I've got perhaps a couple of co-hosts that may be joining me off and on during the season. But I'll be covering every episode. So until then, thank you, Justin. You always make me laugh. We have a great time talking, brother. It's never too long, and I can't wait to do it again. But until then, peace.